cliffcentral.com. Justice Malale is here for the Burning Platform, everybody. Brought to you by Nando's. Good morning, Justice.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. Happy birthday, Mabale.
Thank you, Justice.
Oh, there we go.
21, eh?
Well, so yes, young. As the story goes.
So young.
It's a good story.
Now, again, we've got nothing to talk about this week. It's been quiet.
It's so hard being a political commentator in South Africa. It's just...
You have to scrounge.
You know, I mean, we're going to have to start talking about systems and, you know, and maybe even do a foreign report. Can't you talk about, you know, Theresa May, whether she'll survive or not?
I think that's even more boring, if you ask me. Let's start with the big press conference yesterday where Musi Maimane and Helen Ziller didn't kiss like Mampela and Helen used to. A lot of people are saying that this is very bad for the DA. This is a major credibility problem for Musi. And Helen is still there, but she's not there. I mean, what do we make of this in the analysis?
Yeah, I think there's two things. One, we have to cut through. You know, it's terrible. You can't even quote Helen Ziller these days without being accused of associating with her or liking her or whatever. But let's start with she had this expression, Twitter outrage, that or people were manufacturing outrage. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that's interesting for me is social media and engagement with politics in general in South Africa. And so people like Helen Ziller, who are very active on social media, find themselves under attack, sometimes praised. But the conversation on Twitter and on most social media, or particularly on the comment sections under your News24, your Times Lives and all these news sites, is very divided. It's very much, you are this. Yes, you are a colonialist. You're racist. Mm. No, you are not. That.
There's no nuance at all.
It's straight up.
Which is okay. I mean, people are entitled to jump to conclusions, and we are, right?
Yes. It'd be nice if we added a bit of, you know, reflection in some of these things. I think that there's a lot of non-reflection in some of it. But where's the nuance in the story of the DA and the press conference yesterday? I think Musi Maimane finds himself with a massive, massive headache. Mm. The first thing is that there is no doubt that as a party and as a party leader, he was undermined by Helen Ziller and Helen Ziller's continued defense of her tweets. It was clear that Musi Maimane and a large chunk of the party did not support her stance. But she went on and, you know, not only once, wrote articles on the Daily Maverick defending herself and went essentially... started labeling people as either African nationalists, as not being the real soul of the DA, and so created a division within the DA. That apology yesterday was not. In my view, I don't think she actually believes in the apology. I think that pressure was brought to bear on her to do the right thing. And that pressure probably emanated from some sections of the DA, from some veterans of the DADP.
Some of these people have been there as long as Jeff Radebe has been in cabinet, right?
Indeed, way before. Gosh, can you talk about Jeff Radebe without giggling? And also funders of the DA must have brought pressure to bear on Helen Ziller. So I think the apology was, you know, she's always apologized. To her credit, she apologized on the day of those tweets. She said, if I have caused any offense, da 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 da. Was it fulsome enough? For many people, it wasn't. I didn't feel it was genuine. I think Helen Ziller is a person of very strong beliefs. I believe that she has very strong thoughts on this matter. I don't believe that she believes that she should be apologizing. I believe that what she illustrates about the DA is that essentially there are two DAs. And those DAs is one, it's a liberal party, which comes with certain freedom of speech, certain principles and values, which might not be in their raw interpretation, in tandem with a DA under Musi Maimane that says, we have to acknowledge a few things and let's be careful about how we communicate certain things. Whereas that raw liberalism that she espouses might be that, well, the truth is the truth. I'm sorry it hurts you, but I'm just going to go on with it.
Right.
So her saying colonialism was not all negative might be one of those things that she says. But it's true, and that's what she's been saying. She's been, since March 17, she's been banging on about, but it's true. Look at the facts. Look at the facts. Well, she doesn't stop and say, my word, how many people am I
upsetting
and offending and so forth and so forth. So that interpretation of what the DA is, I think, is going to be something that will continue to challenge the party for a while. I think that the apology yesterday exposes the DA to the ANC.
Who are desperately looking for a distraction.
The ANC is absolutely... I like Zizi Kodwa. I like Zizi Kodwa a lot. I like chatting to him. I think he's great. But I have never seen Zizi Kodwa move as fast as he did yesterday. Within minutes of that press conference ending, Zizi Kodwa was on air on ENCA going on about how shows up the sham and the hypocrisy. Now, if Zizi and the ANC communications team moved that fast, you can imagine what is happening with design of posters and so forth. So the fact that she stays as Premier of the Western Cape gives the ANC a bit of room to say, you see who they're keeping on, you see who they're keeping on.
If you were advising the DA, has Helen Zille become totally poisonous? Is she toxic to the future success of the DA?
No. Actually, I don't think so. I think that, interestingly, I think that the DA is not... It's like the ANC. The ANC is a broad church. You know, the nationalists, the communists, there are all sorts in there. The DA, interestingly, in 1994, the DA was a liberal party, the Democratic Party under Tony Leon. And there are very few liberals in South Africa, actually.
Yeah.
Many of them are in the ANC, so the pure liberals were in the DP. Only 1.7% of the vote went to the DP then. The DP then swallowed up went into alliance with the National Party.
Yes.
Now, that is a deeply conservative party.
Yeah.
Also a party that was largely, well, in fact, almost totally white.
And had a huge legacy.
Apartheid, all sorts. So those two, uncomfortable, but no. We've got to fight back, for example, under Tony Leon, that campaign, and so forth. So this is not a party that is a progressive, united progressive party. It's a party that is of many parts. And a big chunk of those parts is anti-ANC, anti-Jacob Zuma now. And that is a core of the DA's support. So Musi Maimane might have been doing the right thing by going after Helen Zille. But there are many people in the DA, don't be fooled by this, there are many people in the DA who think, Helen Zille, go girl, this is great, you're saying the right things and so forth.
So what you're saying is you can't be a purist if you want to be in politics in the DA or the ANC.
No, I don't think so. I think that you can keep to some core values and try as much as possible to stay with them. But with the DA, you have to make compromises within the DA itself because you have a strong conservative wing which supports... In fact, the people who said to Musi Maimane and to Helen Zille, you two better get on with the job because you're damaging the DA, were absolutely right. They were right because it is possible that the DA could split and the conservative wing of the DA would have gone with a Helen Zille or someone else.
Right.
And the sort of new DA that's growing would have gone with your James Selfs and the Maimanes of this world. And so someone had to say, you have to keep the stitching together, otherwise it's going to burst. Which means there's a job to be done in the DA, and that is to essentially heal those divisions and try to mend the rifts. I don't know how successful that will be. The one upside for Musi Maman is that he emerges as being somewhat in control of the DA. That he doesn't come across as having lost this fight. He comes across as having
But it seems like we've got a double standard here, because when something happens in the ANC, there's collective responsibility. It's the party before the person, even though we know that it's the other way around. In the ANC, the president dictates and the rest of them shut up and listen. In the DA, they do have structures, however, and they're very complicated. I mean, I don't understand this federal nonsense. But it seems that then it's never acceptable, because Musi can't possibly be in control. So it must be that the party is pushing Musi around, not that he's in charge of the party. You know what I mean? We see the ANC in one light and it's not acceptable. We see the DA in another light and it's equally unacceptable, even though they're exactly the opposite.
I don't buy into that. There are two things that Musi Maimane doesn't have agency. Musi Maimane is not a long-standing politician. He's got a whole history in consulting, in public speaking, and all sorts of things in the church and so forth. So I think that one must acknowledge that he was pushed. He was pushed by people like Helen Zille to become who he is, and to become the leader of the DA. So there is...
I think there's a little bit of... you could almost call it like racism.
There is a racism.
You know, this guy, he's not able to be his own person.
His own person. And I don't... So I don't buy 100% into that. I think that any leader will come in with support from certain sections. Jacob Zuma came in with the support of the SACP, COSATU. People like Gladys Zimande jumped up and down and did all sorts of things to get him. Zwelin Zimavavi did all those things. Why is it that it's not right for Musi Maimane to have come in with the support of people like Helen Zille? That he hasn't grown into the job, that he hasn't actually become the leader, I think is unfair. And what it does is that it stops us from judging him as the leader of the DA. It will always be, this guy is run by that person and so forth. It's not right. We need to say about Musi Maimane, to Musi Maimane, you know what? You failed here, and you're the leader of the DA.
We park this at your door. You're not being pushed around by whites.
Yeah.
That's the kind of narrative that we're being given. Now, is it fair? Because this is something I raised earlier. And again, I don't hold a candle for the DA. They've caused their own mess here. They're trying to deal with it. Maybe they're dealing with it. Well, I don't think so. The fact is, though, that we're trying to, in the media, we see a lot of media organizations and we see politicians trying to paint this as a false equivalence, that the ANC and their problems are somehow the same as the DA and their problems. They may have a big PR problem with Helen Zille. Helen Zille might be a complicated creature to control within the DA. But compared to what's going on with state capture, it's not even on the same... They're not even in the same ballpark, right?
No, they're not. And I think the point that Musi Maimane made...
And Helen Zille's stupidity in this case is certainly not affecting you and me and the economy in the way that what's going on in the ANC is.
No, absolutely not. I think, you know, the point that Musi Maimane made yesterday was that you have someone who has been found by the Constitutional Court to have failed to uphold his oath of office. You have a deluge of every day of rot and stench flowing out of the Zuma administration with its association with the Gupta.
I can almost smell it.
The association with the Gupta family. You look at the fact that Jacob Zuma himself should face charges on all the stuff that's in the emails, that the finance minister, the deputy finance minister, this is extraordinary to have the three top key economic figures in your country essentially found with their hands, not just in the, but deep inside the cookie jar, and nothing happens. So I think it's terribly unfair to make that. But there is, and part of it is, in my case, I must say that I find it a lot that, oh, but you never criticize the DA. The DA is not in power, or the EFF is not in power. The ANC is in power. The ANC is the one. Today, you wake up and you find that Moody's has downgraded our SOEs, our banks, because the country has been downgraded. Okay?
Hmm.
That is at the heart. So borrowing is going to become more expensive. There's a whole plethora of things that are going to happen after that downgrade on Friday by Moody's, and the implications of that are huge for ordinary, not just you and me, but mm-hmm. ordinary South Africans who have to get on a bus this morning and go mm-hmm. to work and make ends meet for their children and their families. So this false equivalence is going to continue.
You're I said
going
to my buddy, it's like when Fox News tell you that they're fair and balanced and they bring on one liberal person and four conservatives.
Exactly.
And then they say to you, well, we're showing two sides of the argument as if they're equal.
It's not equal, and it's not fair. But I think just one thing on the DA. I think the DA's biggest problem is that the ANC is going to milk this in the run-up to 2019. So just as the DA, the EFF, are going to put up massive pictures of Jacob Zuma saying, you know, thief in chief and so forth, whatever they say, this one is the one that Zizi Kotwa and the ANC are going to be putting up saying, yeah, she said colonialism wasn't all negative. And it's a very emotive issue. It's a very... it's one that touches a whole load of the people of this country, and it's going to have some, not all, but some impact on the DA. But you know, at the end of the day, my view is that Helen Zille is in the departure lounge. She is now a premier, essentially without any access to the major decision making structures of the DA. And they've put her on the way out. She's going to be absolutely out by 2019. You know, I think she read it badly right at the beginning when she stepped down as leader of the DA. She should have said, thank you very much, I'm going to do other things. And she should have done a Tony Leon or something else, where she doesn't seem to be right behind Musima Emane all along. I think leaders should leave when it's time to go, and she's hang on a bit.
We have a problem in Africa with people who just stay longer than they should, right? It's a big problem.
It's a big problem, and I think she should have avoided it. In retrospect, none of us spoke about it when she first stepped down.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, it would have been the best thing that when she stepped down as leader of the party, she should have stepped down from some of these, and she should have become her own person. You know, Tony Leon writes a lot of columns now. He even jumps up and down last week and says it's time for Helen to go. And no one gives a toss what he has to say. Why?
Because he's not in charge of the DA.
He's not in charge of anything. He's just a citizen. He's a citizen. And that, I think, was a big mistake that was made with... it's a bit like if Thabo Mbeki had hung around after Jacob Zuma left.
And and by the way, there's nothing wrong with being an activist citizen.
No,
and maybe Helen
not.
Could be really useful in
absolutely
that respect.
Absolutely not.
For those few liberals who remain.
Exactly. So I think that was a fundamental mistake. And the continuation of the situation as you have it now will still be pretty uncomfortable for the DA.
All right. Other things. I'm quite appalled by the fact that we've got a major natural disaster in the Knysna area, and the president has done and said and appeared to care absolutely not at all about this. I mean, you know, if he doesn't care about anything, because he also didn't attend the shack fires in Hart Bay. He doesn't care about poor people, rich people, the middle class. He's so wrapped up in his own stuff at the moment that this country could all go to hell in a handbasket, and he would be riding the broomstick down with us.
But my brother, let's be fair, the man has a lot to contend with.
He does.
Every morning he rushes down his driveway to get the, grab the newspapers and check, what now? What's next?
The Gupta leaks.
The Gupta
everywhere.
Leaks are just, you know, out of every pore of his administration.
But we're looking for signs of vulnerability here. I mean, there are two, three things that this week were curious. Can we talk about Ben Gubane? For a second, why did he suddenly resign? I mean, this is very unlike people who've been deployed to state-owned enterprises. Usually they cling on like barnacles until they prized loose and then they have to get a golden handshake. Ben Gubane just suddenly went, boom, I'm out of here. Do you think he smells something in the water?
Someone told me yesterday that they read on Twitter that the reason Ben Gubane waited till the 11th hour to resign is because he didn't want to be called Ben 10. For resigning at 10 p.m. So he actually submitted his resignation at 11 p.m.
What do we make of this?
Look, I'm not going to get into the Ben 11 or Ben 10 issue, but I find it interesting that that this is someone at the SABC clung on for, you know, I mean, he just hung on to that job like it's nobody's business until he just absolutely had to go. Same thing at Eskom now. And he waited until his favorite CEO, Brian Molefe, had been essentially kicked out by the minister or on instruction of the minister. What is happening is that there is a pushback, and there is a pushback by society, by voices in society, saying, no way, this is just going on, it's gone too far. I think at Eskom, there are many more skeletons that are just going to spill out of those cupboards. I think that what we are seeing is the beginning of the panic about what else is in these emails and how is it going to affect people. I think a lot of people are now saying, what should I do? Should I ask Sia if Sia can give me his uncle who's a lawyer's number? Because stuff is going to begin to happen. The DA has been laying charges left, right, and center against Ben Gubane, against the president, against Malusi Gigaba, the deputy finance minister, all these people. Those charges are going to pile up. The hawks, who are captured and need to show us that they are not, if they are not, are beginning to even say, oh, maybe it's time to look into this. The number of criminal investigations, of civil investigations, of lawsuits that are beginning to slowly pile up is starting. The most interesting one for me is this formulation that at some point the NPA has to say, sorry, we are not going to charge Jacob Zuma.
Yeah.
Because they have the Shabir Sheikh charges, they have other charges that have been laid by various people. So not just Jacob Zuma, so Ben Gubane, for example, and his role at Eskom. People like Sifiso Buthelezi and his role at Transnet. Now, if the NPA says, here's a certificate saying, I am not charging Gareth Cliff with whatever, then there's a man called Harry Nair who has, you'll remember, some time back, launched a civil
prosecution office.
Office. Once that certificate is issued, it gives Sia the right to then say, now the public prosecutor is out the way, I can go for it.
And it's still a criminal prosecution. It's just in private hands.
It's in private hands. And if Harry Nell wins, the state pays all his fees for doing it.
And then the person who's being charged
goes to jail.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if Jacob Zuma or Ben Gubane or Sifiso Buthelezi or all these other people want Sean Abrahams being the prosecutor, or they want Harry Nell being the prosecutor.
Oh,
I
bet you I know which one. But can Sean delay it long enough for it to go away?
Sean realizes now that, you know, so many of these people will be thrown under the bus, are being thrown under the bus by Jacob Zuma. He's got to make a choice. Either he is going to go down, or he's got to open up and let things happen. So the pressure on that man, he can't be sleeping right now.
No.
Because there's a lot going on. So I think that's the scenario we're entering. So
it's ironic that he's called Sean the Sheep and he can't count them.
Okay, but it just isn't nodding off.
Just can't get to sleep.
So the point about what's going on now, I think with people like Ben Gubane and others jumping, I think they're clearing their desk to make sure that they've got time for consultations with their lawyers. It's going to be this thing's not going to end now. There's going to be more.
There's a lot of people who should go to prison,
and I think they realize that finally. It's beginning to catch up.
What about our friend Claudio Motsoeneng? There was news about him yesterday that he's also, I mean, this is all for Mabale's birthday. Ben Gubane, Claudio Motsoeneng, Helen Zille.
Claudio Motsoeneng, he's from the Free State, Mabale.
Every time
stop.
Anything
you
horrible
know,
from
know
the
justice.
Free she doesn't bring up...
No, there's nothing wrong with Hammanskraal.
Hammanskraal.
some of my best friends are from Hammanskraal. Hey. Nothing wrong with Hammanskraal. Can I just... Claudio Motsoeneng has always thought... So you asked about Ben Gubane. Think about all these people, the Zuma deployees in all these state-owned enterprises, public broadcaster, all these. Claudio Motsoeneng is now on the back foot. His deals with the Guptas are being cancelled by this interim board at the SABC. At Eskom, the minister is finally finding her backbone. Let's hope she keeps it for long enough. Boom, getting rid of people like Ben Gubane and so forth. That guy didn't resign, by the way. He is a man on fire, and he's got to go, and he knows it. So, boom, he's gone. And every day now, scandals falling out of the closet about him. So there's a pushback against the Zuma guys, and there's a cleanup happening. It doesn't have the full support of this administration. It doesn't have the full support of the president. But what you're seeing with Claudio Motsoeneng, who thought, I'm untouchable. Mm. The president loves me. Oh, this people singing outside my door, or paid people singing outside the SABC in my honor and so forth. Well, sorry, guy. It's all over now.
And the sadness is he's left so much damage in his wake. I mean, we've got artists, this is why
people who have done all these things, who have broken the law, have to be criminally charged. We cannot continue with a situation where people think, oh, you know, I'll take my, what was the bonus, 30 million?
Well, it was 11 just for selling the SABC's archive to MultiChoice.
But that was tranche number one. There was supposed to be two more of about the same. So this guy should actually be stripped of that cash. And he should face criminal charges. That's what should happen at Eskom. That's what should happen at Transnet and all these SOEs. So, you know, I think it's the beginning of the end. I think that big man syndrome is going to find itself continually for the foreseeable future on the back foot. And I think that's a good thing. We don't want people like that. You know, there's a case to be made for local content, for even a real movement on local airplay. But to think that you use that to loot, to sell the family jewels of the SABC to DSTV or some other private player, it's just not right. It's just it's horrific, actually.
Well, there's lots of other good stuff to talk about. Anything else that's pressing on your agenda this morning?
I'm watching now what happens with the ANC election race. The fact that Colin Maine came out with his ANC Youth League.
But hang on, there was a different Oros on TV yesterday. Also, Stotla Mafetle Fetle. Some guy, Jabulo something or another.
Oh, Jabulani Nzuza, he's the Secretary General.
So he was
AIDS.
Okay. So yes. Oros number two.
Yes.
He was on TV.
Guys,
these guys
don't tarnish the Oros brand.
No, we're not.
Like this.
We all liked Oros.
I love
kids.
Oros.
But these guys had too much. They've been at the Oros trough for too much of the time. This guy, he's enormous, and he came out and. Really, I mean, it's hard to distinguish between him and Miss Piggy, when you know, the Muppet, without the wig. And she, I mean, he is sitting there and he reads out a list of who he thinks would be the right people to be the top six. And who did he put in? He put in...
Dr. Nkosa Zana Dlamini.
Obviously. Obviously. Jesse Duarte is still in there.
Yeah.
He said he quite likes the
sound... Didi Mabuza.
Didi Mabuza from Mpumalanga. Mm. Who else?
Ace Magashule.
Ah, from the Free State Premier League.
Fikile Mbalula makes it in.
Yes, in only a just position squeaked that, in like a deputy something.
Yeah, a second deputy secretary general.
And Natim Tetwa, interestingly.
Natim Tetwa is the chairman of the ANC, so taking over from Baleka Mbete.
According to the youth.
According to the youth league. You know, there are no surprises in that list, except for maybe Fikile Mbalula, actually. There are no surprises because it's exactly the slate that has been set up by the Jacob Zuma faction, which is the Nkosa Zana Dlamini Zuma faction, which is the Batavile Dlamini faction. You can see that I'm going through the list, and it's the list of failure, if you look at it. But what's interesting for me is that Gwede Mantashe is not on that list. And Gwede Mantashe is not on that list, meaning that the engine room of the ANC, the Secretary General's office, is not in the Zuma faction for... this run-up to the ANC conference. Whereas in 2012, Gwede Mantashe, therefore the Secretary General's office, was in. In 2007, the Kgalema Motlanthe Secretary General's office was in there. And what is key about the Secretary General's office, it's what we always say here, is this, is that that is the office that determines who goes to conference, who are the delegates at that conference. If Jacob Zuma doesn't have the Secretary General's office, it means that Gwede Mantashe may well be offered a position on the other side, and that is the Cyril Ramaphosa side.
Now, you said to me that the Secretary General's office has a lot of power when it comes to the branches.
Exactly. And so if the Gwede Mantashe office ends up with the Ramaphosa side of the ANC, we have a big thing here. And that means that it's harder for people to, or for the Jacob Zuma faction, to rig that election. And that it becomes easier for marginalized branches to make their case and make it to the conference. So it could become a potential game changer. And we'll see how it goes in the next 6 months. But I think that we beginning to see a real race where it's not a foregone conclusion that, oh, you know, we've got our guys. The people who'll pitch up at conference are the pro-Jacob Zuma guys.
Now, I'm curious about one last thing before we let you go. You wrote your book, We Have Now Begun Our Descent, almost 2 years ago now. And how many of these predictions are still on track? I mean, how much of what you said there? Because I see people constantly tweeting you and saying, oh, they love the book and it's still relevant, and it is. I mean, I read it right at the beginning when it was released. But are you comfortable with some of the things you said in the book happening?
Yeah, well...
Because it's hard to predict the future.
It's hard, but I mean, that in terms of, you know, it's sad to say that it's almost like people who like saying, I told you so, Gareth, told you.
This is what I'm doing. I'm creating an opportunity
for me to say,
I told you so.
But it's painful because 2 years ago, talking about the ratings agencies, that we will go down and get downgraded further because of Jacob Zuma and his administration. Well, it's happened. At the time, I was warning about unemployment is at 24%. Well, it's at 27.7%. Yeah. You talk about the number of service delivery protests. At the time, the police said we have 14,700 incidents of unrest. Well, that's gone so way up that actually doesn't get released by the police anymore.
They're so embarrassed about it, they can't say anything.
So all these measures have gone way worse than they were. And I think this is where failure to stop and say, guys, it really is happening. We are descending without a proper pilot. Is something that we need to constantly say. Otherwise, we'll be sitting here, you and I, in 2019, in just a year and a half, we'll be talking about a very different scenario, and it will be a scenario that's even worse than where we are. We'll be down to three ratings agencies giving us junk status. We'll have worse unemployment. Companies will be saying, what's the point of putting money in South Africa? And so they'll be investing in Angola, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, wherever else, and not here. So, you know, we have to constantly say, we need to do better. We're not doing better.
Go and read Justice's book.
That's the truth.
He told you so. Truth. Yeah, he told you so. All right, thank you, Justice.
Thanks so much. Very good. Thanks, guys.
The Burning Platform is powered by Nando's every week, and usually on a Thursday. Today on a Wednesday. CliffCentral.com.